This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
19 after 9 o'clock here on Power Perspective. Thank you very much for staying with us. I am Sibenzile Gambule with you until midnight this evening. We're joined now on the line by the South African Communist Party's first Deputy General Secretary, Swale Mapaela, on the line. It's good to have you on the show, Mr. Mapaela. Are you well?
I'm all right, Sibenzile. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you very much. You'd hear those calls that we've just heard there about how South Africans feel that we are being really dealt a raw deal here, being left behind economically. On any given day, you'll talk about the importance of fighting the battle against unemployment in this country, the lack of opportunity exacerbated by this pandemic. But of course, it has been an issue that we've been dealing with for the longest time still. And perhaps that's a good place to start, right? Because it is indeed at the heart of the issues that we talk about on a daily basis, about the difficulties that many South Africans face. And one of those being that of there not being sufficient opportunity and feeling as though people coming from other parts of the continent, other parts of the region or the world are in fact a threat.
Yeah, so I think firstly, the callers are very right. The crisis of unemployment in South Africa is affecting almost every household, particularly in African communities. And therefore, it has deepened lack of income and lack of sustainability and livelihoods for people. The massive crisis. I think government is tackling that. At the same time, I think the methods that they are using to tackle that are insufficient for the kind of the crisis that we have. Precisely because we are monolithic as government in terms of thinking on economic interventions. We are just following the capitalist system raw as it is in the context of South Africa, even when it is not producing results. And that's a fundamental issue that all of South Africa will have to deal with and make government realize that it can't repeat the same policies that are not bearing fruit. So there has to be some fundamental changes, largely in the realignment of monetary policy, which is driven through the Reserve Bank, mm-hmm. and making the Reserve Bank an active role player in the fight against unemployment and in intervention to fund strategic areas of job creation. And therefore, not just focusing its work or its mandate about inflation targeting, important as that is, but also making sure that part of its mandate is about economic growth and job creation, and to ensure that there's sufficient attention on the job side, as well as also the inverse side of the role of the Treasury, which is in charge of the fiscal policy and allocation of budgets, that all of these things have to align, and also the mandate of the ruling party that has galvanized the people to say this is what we think we will do. But if you make your interventions that are largely entrenching the capitalist system, that's a system of inequality. It's not a system that creates jobs. It's not meant for that. Mm. It's a system that is meant for creation of profit. And therefore, you need government intervention to redirect investment. We have capacity, we have enough resources. In fact, truly speaking, I think what is happening in South Africa, it's annoying, to say the least, because there are other options. But I think we've become the watchmen of the South African economy and not make the economy meet the needs of the people, which is what we need to do. And the opportunities, the current COVID-19 pandemic has worsened the situation, and it has created the possibility that cannot be questioned by anyone anywhere else in the world, including the Bretton Woods Institute, the IMF, the World Bank, the OECD countries, and other big corporate and investors. They can even the rating agencies, they can complain because even in their respective countries over the world, these kind of interventions have been debated. As we're starting here, before I came to this, I was watching Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve of the U.S., who had held the world economy in his hands to pronounce on government intervention through the Reserve Bank. The Federal Reserve is like our Reserve Bank here. But our Reserve Bank doesn't talk about that. It talks about how to prep up commercial banks. And that's part of the source of the problem. So, of course, there are many other alternatives on the table, which I think we should just implement. And if we can implement some of those alternatives, including being creative to the current challenges, we should be able to come out of the quagmire that we face as a country.
You know, to hear you say that the conditions in this country, the state of play, is annoying. I suppose for somebody who's dealing with these issues on a daily basis, it would feel like that. For South Africans who are powerless and feel very helpless because of these conditions, it's more than annoying. It's devastating. It's devastating because your prospects in life are stunted. The prospects or the possibilities for your children's lives are stunted as well. And it's an ongoing thing. And you wonder when on earth it's going to come to an end and when people, in fact, will eventually get their opportunity out in the sun, so to speak. And of course, this question would then come to you frequently. And sadly, it comes perhaps only or mostly around elections where your alliance, where you're being in bed with the ruling party who have been given the mandate to drive these changes, will then ask, well, is it doing what people need it to do? Right? Do you believe that the party is indeed the party that the electorate should give the mandate to do the work to transform their lives?
Well, yes, firstly, when I say it's annoying, I'm talking about the implementation of policy, the fact that there are options that are not being followed. But I think South Africans do have options, and they are not helpless. The primary problem in this country is the capitalist system, and any other economy or even any other party that think that they can resolve the South African problem within the framework of capitalism in this country, it's an illusion. It will not happen. There's no way in the world where capitalism has ended poverty. Even in the so-called most advanced countries in the U.S., we have people sleeping under bridges, who have no houses, in the world's leading economy.
Yeah.
And yet, if you go to socialist countries, you have the opposite, where shelter is guaranteed to the people. So whether we are in bed, we are not necessarily in bed. We are part and parcel of the alliance, of the ANC. We accept its weaknesses. We also accept its strength. And I think there have been recent times where we have not been that powerful as a movement because of internal strife, which we are trying to sort out. But overall, I think if we were to look at our propositions, for policy choices, we have been leading on choices that are favoring the public. That's why, for instance, yesterday, our director was addressing the Central Committee of COSATU, which is like the NGC of COSATU, which, by the way, has been receiving enough attention in the media, and fairly so, because that's a very critical policy forum as well. And in that NGC, or what we call Central Committee in the language of COSATU, he was calling for motivating our position in that conference for COSATU to support that our stance that the African bank must be turned into a state bank. Because as you know, even in this period of a pandemic, the banks have been making huge profits. In the last 2 months, two banks have announced massive high margins than the previous years, even the year before COVID-19. So that shows that those institutions, unless you control the financial sector institutions, unless you control institutions of finance, you will not be able to direct investment proper. And unless you also have policies that can deal with a direction of investment, like, for instance, we have over 5 trillion rand in the financial sector in this country that is available for deployment any other time, anywhere. But because the people who are controlling that, and this is the workers' money, including your money, whether it's provident funds, all sorts of different funds, they are managed by big capital and the insurances who are deploying these monies all over the world. For instance, last year, the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador here in South Africa, Ms. Marx, was proud to say that ESCOM money, pension fund money, it saves somewhere in Kansas or Kansas in the U.S. Texas. I mean, when we're struggling here to save ESCOM as a country and to make it more powerful as an institution that can provide energy to our people, the pension fund of ESCOM is invested in creating jobs in America. This is the discord that we are talking about, because there's been a decry and against public economy. And our call is to strengthen public economy so that we are accountable for the overall public economy. In other words, you need the commanding height of the economy to be in the hands of the people. You can't let those to be in the hands of capital, which is not interested in the well-being. Capital doesn't care whether I stay in a shack or in an informal settlement or whether I ate last night before I come to work. When they want me to work, they want to take all, to sap all my energy for their profits, and they pay me a pittance wage. So the primary problem, the elephant in the room in the South African economy, is unmitigated free market capitalism in this country. That's where the source of the problem is. And we have to deal with this issue collectively. And the people have to accept our mobilization. They don't have to look at us as communists, because we are South African nonetheless. We are facing the same challenges that they face. So they only sometimes, we feel, they want to deal with us on the basis of what capitalism has been saying and the media has been saying over the various decades against socialism. But we have provided concrete alternatives on the table, and if those alternatives can be tested, surely we can deal with this current crisis. For instance, we have put a proposal that can there be a debate about a 24-hour economy in this country, like in other countries, for instance. And a 24-hour economy, which means it's a three-shift economy, eight-hour working day, but it's a rolling process. Then you can see how we can tackle the crisis that we have. But it should start with the public service. At the moment, sometimes even people complain about public service. One of the callers here was complaining about public service.
Yes.
Because the staff, they are understaffed, they are always under duress. There's too many people that needs to be served. They can't just meet the pace. But if you run a 24-hour economic system that involves all of governments opening up throughout the night, throughout the day, you are then able to change things differently. We need to put that debate on the table. Then we can tackle this crisis that we face as a country. We are in charge. We've got the ability to make legislation. We legislate trading hours and so forth for companies, for other institutions. Then you will see the vibrancy of our economy. And we won't be fighting about necessarily lack of employment. We'll then shift the debate to about proper class struggle amongst the people.
My guest this evening is the first Deputy Secretary, General Secretary of the South African Communist Party, Solly Mapaila, who's joining us this evening. I know we'd invited you to speak particularly about what this reconfiguration might look like, where we then see yourselves, if ever, of course, contesting and asking South Africans to give you the mandate. We'll get to that in just a moment. I want to take Brian. I was calling us on the line from Joburg South because Brian wants to speak about these alternatives. Brian giving us a ring on 0861 987 000, and I'll take tweets as well in just a moment on this issue. Brian, go ahead. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Sivinzil. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm okay. Mr. Mapaila, how are you?
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Well, you see, I hear what Mr. Mapaila is saying in terms of the alternatives, you know. But my concern is the same SACP COSATU are actually going in bed with ANC. Now on elections, you'll see them campaigning for the ANC. But the question is now, if they've got all these alternatives, as the citizens of this country, it's important that we know those alternatives that they put on the table, so that at least when we say we challenge the ANC and say you are failing us as an ANC, we should not then say a tripartite alliance is failing us, but we should then be able to say, but you have been given the alternatives, but you are not coming to the party and utilizing them to make sure that, you know, there is a total difference in the livelihood of the poor, of the poorest in this country. And I think it's important that Mr. Mapaila outline all those alternatives.
Good.
And then
yes.
Be transparent to
yes.
us, and then so that we can be able to support at the ultimate end to take the ANC to task and to make sure that as a governing party, they deal with those and then make sure that there is a change.
Let's get those alternatives up, Brian. I went to you for that specific reason, just so that we can double click on that. And I think Mr. Mapaila has started doing that already. Go ahead, please, Mr. Mapaila.
Well, at the moment, we are in alliance with the ANC. We support the ANC even in these coming elections. We'll be voting together with the ANC. We think the ANC at the moment possesses the most comprehensive transformation agenda and program that, if implemented well, can take us forward. But at the same time, that program cannot be implemented without tampering with existing capitalism in the country. So therefore, there are many other areas, for instance, we have spoken about, which is actually in the ANC manifesto, prescribed assets. The financial sector controls, about last year they said they were having about 15 trillion rand. Most of that is invested all over the world. And they said COVID-19 in the middle of 2020 had knocked off about 3 trillion rand, because their investment that were not shielded or were declining in different parts where they've invested that. If you were to take and redirect part of that investment, for instance, into the country and put heavy penalties if people invest South African money abroad in the name of free market economy, you would then have ability to respond to the infrastructure deficit that we have in the country. For instance, we don't have enough proper roads in this country, across the country. If you were to launch a massive campaign, infrastructure campaign to build dams, to have enough water, I was passing one day to the Free State, I was passing from the Northern Cape side, but going into the Free State side, we're passing the Orange River. It was just unbelievable. So much massive water, fresh water, allowed to be drained right into the sea, and yet the people don't have water. So you need a committed government to put up enough infrastructure across the country. In putting up that infrastructure, you'll create more jobs and more skills. We'll actually run out of skills in this country if we were to redirect
the financial muscle that we have as a country. We're the most industrialized country on the African continent, and we produce military vehicles, but we can't produce police cars, we can't produce ambulances for ourselves, we can't produce public transport for our country, but we produce military vehicles of high caliber that we sell all over the world. And that's the kind of thinking that I think we need to unlock, so that we allow the production here, the industrialization here, to be based here. Of course, we are in an international, where we believe in a globalized world. There will be certain things that we'll need from other countries. Yes. But there must be a direct focus on meeting the needs of our people, and the economy will similarly grow. But if we live with only think that this will be driven by the interest of capital alone, then at one point, capital will say, well, this kind of investment will no longer require, and that investment goes down to the drain. So it is this kind of things, prescribed asset. We proposed, for instance, some years ago, township and village economic development within the framework of rural development system. It has been abandoned, and in some instances where it has been implemented, it has not been implemented proper because it has not been sustainable. But we really think that there are many other areas, the business of cooperatives, for instance, not fully supported, and we think they need to be supported. And we've got examples of countries in the world that have shown successes in these areas. Take, for instance, the top 500 companies in the world today. Number one is the Chinese Public Bank. Number four is the Chinese Public Bank. Number nine is the Chinese Public Bank. They employ hundreds of thousands of workers. These are public institutions successful, playing in an international economy owned by the public. Now here, there's monolithism that says only the private sector is the solution. When this private sector has failed the people of this country, and when this private sector fails, people don't point at it. They point at government. And the same government then privatize some of our own institutions to the same private sector in the name of efficiency and so forth. And there's never been efficient. Some of the private sector institutions are the worst institutions. I don't know, listeners here will know that they would have dealt with, for instance, with many of the phone companies and many other insurance institutions. They are private institutions. The services are not that great. But out there, an impression is created that what is public is not good. And we are for public sector-based economy without necessarily neglecting or rejecting the participation of the private sector.
I mean, that view doesn't just come out of nowhere, right, to say that what is public is bad. If you look at how the public sector or state-owned entities, for example, have been managed and the impact that has had, that view is holds water for the most part until we start seeing a proper turnaround, a proper commitment to running these entities properly. People can then restore their faith in the public sector.
No, I mean, you know, our provincial secretary here in Gauteng, Comrade Jacob Mamabolo, when he was in a bureaucrat in government, he led the transformation of Home Affairs with Minister Nosiwe Mapisa Nyagula. They turned it around. It used to produce an ID after 3-4 months. They turned it around to less than 30 days, 28 days. They turned around every other thing without firing one single worker. In fact, when he was implementing this program, workers came to confront us to say, but they have announced a program to turn around this thing. They're going to fire workers. He kept on assuring them that there will be no worker fired. But they just turned around the entity. It's a public sector that is functioning. You go to SARS, you go to several others. There are those that are shining as good examples that are doing well. Of course, there are those that there have been problems, particularly those that were captured by private capital in collusion with corrupt elements in the state. That is why, as the Communist Party, we're the first organization to call for a commission of inquiry into allegations of corruption and state capture, what is now currently called the State Capture Commission.
Yes.
Before Advocate Tulima Donzela came to a conclusion, we have done that in public and said, let's get this commission to deal with this process of corruption. So corruption happens all over the world, but it must be dealt with. I think the attitude of dealing with it is what is more important, is the one that restores public confidence. Even those in the SOEs will know, once you do wrong things, you will be dealt with. And I think that there will be consequences, no doubt. And we begin to see some of those consequences, the interventions that have been made to strengthen institutions of democracy, because those institutions, if they are not functional enough, will not be able to give us the best outcomes. But if you make them strong and effective, then you will then see the change even in the posture of government. But certainly corruption remains a problem that we must deal with. And we also need to strengthen our own institutions, including strengthening SOEs instead of selling them.
Let me take more calls on 0619870000. Basil, you're in Boksburg. Hi to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm great. So you're very right when you say that the public institution, as we speak right now, the ones that are excelling are very few. Let's take, you talked about the Secretary General in Housing, the Department of Transport, and you look at how long it takes you just to renew a PDP, a mere PDP. There are people that live as drivers in Housing at the moment. Their system is not working, it's not efficient, it's not working. For me, as I said, when you listen to, by the way, I'm a big fan of Soli, but for me, it's disappointing me in many fronts, SACP as it were. SACP at the moment, I feel like they are out of ideas. When you listen to him, you will swear that SACP is an opposition part. But he says, no, we are partners. We're not in bed with any. We're just equal partners with the ANC. But he's speaking as if they are an opposition party trying to propose into the ANC. If they are equal partners, they will be able to persuade the ANC. So they are not able to persuade the ANC because they are not equal partners with the ANC. And lastly, for me, it's quite disappointing that in the last election you said you're not going to run against Mr. Zimande. For me, I think you can't have an organization. This thing of us as Africans thinking that we've got the divine right to lead our organizations until we die. It's just wrong. I mean, Mr. Zimande has been the leader of your organization forever, and I don't know when he's going to resign, and you are not even ready to contest him. It's disappointing.
Basil in Boksburg, thank you. Thank you very much. How long is too long in a position of leadership? Let's also hear from Unhlanhla in Soshanguve. Hi, Unhlanhla.
Ngiyaphila,
thanks, Bob.
Ngiyaphila. Mina, ngithi, surely, Chris Hani, may his soul rest in peace, is turning in his grave, that the compassionate consummate soldier he was and patriot he was, his organization has been reduced to a think tank of the ANC, to a group of men who got internal affairs, who squabble amongst one another when the country is burning, when the country is down. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Landon Sosha, thank you. Madume, you're in Germiston. Good evening.
Yes, ma'am. I just want to solicit Mr. Mapaila's views on BEE, if BEE is still relevant in our country. But also, I need to say this. And this is just unfortunate. On paper, ANC policies and that of SACP are two different segments of politics in South Africa. So, but the last one, it's so far, I think the ANC has reached a stage of disintegration to the extent that I think SACP should just stay far from the ANC. Thank you very much.
Madume, thank you. Let's also hear from Abner in Rustenburg. Good evening, Abner.
Good evening. My question to Soli is that SACP as a vanguard of the working class, they are so silent in the agency treatment to its own employees. What is his take to protect the employees of the agency?
Abner in Rustenburg, thank you very much for that question. Mr. Mapaila, several questions there. Perhaps we start backwards with Abner there, talking about the workers of the ANC and their struggles as well.
Yeah, of course, we are in solidarity with the ANC workers. We have made that public. We have not shied away from saying that we're in solidarity with the workers of the ANC and workers of our movement as a whole and of our country. The ANC has been suffering financial crisis. Even us in the party, we don't have enough resources. As you can imagine, with us even worse because the capitalists don't want to fund us. But nonetheless, challenges that we're facing the ANC has been facing many other parties in this country as well. Some of them we know, although they don't talk about it, they even closed their offices, they fired staff. ANC hasn't fired staff. So that's part of the difference. But we support the concerns of the workers of the ANC. The well-being of their well-being is very important to us, and we've made that public. We've not shied away from that. But I think... look, I don't want to enter into a space of internal matters of the SACP, whether a leader is elected in the party by Congress of the Communist Party, and there's a process to elect leaders. And we need to respect that. That's an internal process of the Communist Party. At an appropriate time, there will be new leaders who will come in. But the bottom line is that we are not in opposition to the ANC. And yet we have a different but complementary ideas because the ideas that we have, some of them are being implemented by the ANC. Some of them, I mean, literally, Sebenzile, I think, and I've repeated this in one particular platform, I think within this Power FM, that we are literally the only organization in this country that campaigns, that has more campaigns than any other party in this country, including all of these other parties combined.
We what do you mean by that?
Policy. What I mean is that we campaign for social policy, major issues that confront our country, both from government and from capital. For instance, just to give you one example.
Yeah.
The national health insurance, which we are fighting for it to be speedily implemented, was a campaign of the SACP, the public health campaign, that we launched even when at the time that Comrade Mantu Chabalala Msimang was still Minister of Health. So ultimately it was adopted as a policy by the ANC, now it's adopted as a policy of government. But for us it's important because it will benefit all of society, the working class in particular. When we launched this campaign, we had our prison on the class that we represent, the working class, the poor. We have many other campaigns. We launched Maubuyo Mhlaba campaign, Bring Back the Land campaign. In the early 2000s, leading to the first land summit in this country, spearheaded by us, mobilizing even a series of NGOs and people who are landless, who were evicted from their communities across the country. Now, almost 15, 20 years down the line, everyone is talking about this particular land, but we put up the campaign onto the table and refined the key ideas of that particular campaign. That's what vanguardism is about, as far as we are concerned. But of course, we know we could do better than that. There are many other campaigns, the financial sector campaign that we've thrown directly to capital when they were refusing to grant our people credit, the commercial banks. They blacklisted places like the rest of Soweto, for instance. It will be blacklisted. If you are a doctor, accountant, an engineer, you come from Soweto, you want to establish your own engineering firm or medical practice, they won't give you money as long as you stay in Soweto. And the graduate that you are with at school who comes from the suburbs, immediately they finish, they are granted money because of their location. We ended that. It was a campaign of the SACP. We fought the credit bureaus. We exposed who they were. We dealt with them. We even put a law. We drove that particular process to put the law.
So with all of these campaigns, with all of these causes that you are pushing, you still won't take the decision to go at it alone, to contest and challenge the ANC?
The working class must say so. We are not a party for ourselves. We are not an elite party organization. If the class, the working class, organized, particularly through workers' organizations, say, Communist Party stand for election, we will do so. But our campaigns, we are clear about those campaigns that stood for the poor, for the rightless, including farm workers. We had special campaigns on them. Many other policies. If you read them proper and read our campaigns, you will see that they precede. We campaign and the policies precede us. So it's important in that space that that appreciation is never lost. I must also respond to this point that yes, we support people BEE. We campaign. In fact, when we're critiquing BEE ourselves, we propose triple BEE, which is broad-based Black economic empowerment, because we recognize the fact that the inequalities between Black and white in this country is a consequence of white domination in this country that appropriated the wealth of Black people, and therefore the restorative process needed to take place, and the movement felt that it needed to take place in different forms, including in an economic process form. But our main task is not much about triple B, important as it is, which we fully support. And we think that it should not be about individuals, but about communities as well. Our main form is public ownership and socialization of the economy. That's where we fully transfer the ownership of the economy to the people and into their hands. And they will also be able to protect that particular economy because they know it is their economy.
All right, let's take some more calls here. Lebohang's on the line from Pretoria. Lebohang, go for it.
I wanted to ask about the issue of public ownership. In a country where we don't have any organizational context, you don't even know who is the leader. Somebody comes out of a meeting and says, who said this, who said that. There's no leadership, there's no operational plan, there's no performance evaluation methods. If you look at the state of the SOEs, we don't even have trains that are running. But then they found everything that was all well oiled, and it only needed proper maintenance. Who is going to take lead of public ownership when we got only corrupt leaders who are running stomach politics?
Thank you for that question. Lebohang is on the line there from Pretoria. Well, we also have the spokesperson of the SACP, Dr. Alex Mashilo, who's called in, who also wants a bite at this conversation. Dr. Mashilo, how are you?
Hi, Sebenzile, and greetings to Comrade Mapaila.
Greetings, Dr. Mashilo.
Thank you so much. There is one thing I propose we need to start promoting, even on public radio show programs like this. That is to anchor the assertions that we make, whether from a production perspective or whether from the calls that we make as callers, to anchor the comments and the assertions we make in evidence and in science. Let me give you an example. Statistics South Africa releases a quarterly report on liquidations and insolvencies in the economy. And it divides these liquidations and insolvencies into two categories. The first category is that of compulsory liquidations, and the second category is that of voluntary liquidations. From January to June 2021, in South Africa, there were 902 companies that were liquidated in 10 sectors. And the 10th sector is called unclassified. I put it to you that an overwhelming majority, almost 99% of the companies that failed, are private sector companies. So if you follow this report for a period of 27 years, you will see that in the South African economy, the companies that fail are private sector companies. In fact, you will realize that even when we talk about the example of the African bank, you know that it is a private commercial bank. It was failing. It took an institution established in terms of the constitution, that is the South African Reserve Bank, to bail it out And as a result of that bailout, the Reserve Bank ended up owning 50% of the African Bank. So it is important to anchor the claims that we make in evidence. And I am saying this because I come from a trade union background. I have negotiated against retrenchment in private sector companies that were failing. And in many of them, workers walked away without a cent. Because when there is a liquidation, it is the other creditors who take priority. So people who have never experienced these problems can always rush and say it is the public sector that fails the most. So I put it to you that quantitatively, it is the private sector companies that fall and that fail our economy. The 2.2 million jobs that were lost between April 2020 and June 2020 were lost in failing private sector companies or in private sector companies where priority was on profitability and not on job creation. And because priority was on profitability and not job creation, those workers were retrenched and they were left in the hands of the state to look after in the form of grants.
In 30 seconds, Dr. Mashila, I must go to the news, and so we'll have to leave it there. What is the point you're then driving home about the public sector and how the public should be viewing it?
The point that I am driving is that we should not anchor perspectives in ideological notions that are not backed by evidence. So if you talk about a failing economy in South Africa, you are talking about an economy that is overwhelmingly a private sector economy and in which the way forward will not succeed unless we build a publicly owned sector.
Dr. Mashila there is the national spokesperson of the SACP. We'll continue with this discussion if Mr. Mapaile will just grant us a few more minutes as well. I know there are a couple more calls as well, and we want to get to those before we wrap up this conversation with the South African Communist Party. It's a touch after 10 o'clock. And time for your latest Power News with Nomusa Zwane.
Good evening, Sevenzile. There is nothing that the SACP is good about. They gave Nzimande a position in government. Soli is next. He will be thanked with a position. There's nothing that the current SACP fights for, that the likes of Chris Hani fought for. They don't stand on anything but politics of the stomach. They don't want anything good that's going to come out for black people. They just want to enrich themselves. That's what they do.
Hi, Sebi. I'm not sure whether we still have SACP or we are only left with the name. Even if they were to decide tomorrow that they don't vote with ANC or whatever the case might be, the truth of the matter, they don't have the masses behind them. I also hear Mr. Mapaile saying that they were the first organization that came out, and then they said that they must establish the commission of inquiry. And this makes me ask myself a question, you know, did they put their money where their mouth is? Did they go to court when the former president was taking the former PP to court? Did they go to court? Did they fight for this organization like other organizations that put their money, that really fought, like the EFF?
10 minutes after 10 o'clock here on Power Perspective, still in conversation with Soli Mapaila, who's the first Deputy General Secretary of the South African Communist Party. You're sending through your comments and thoughts. Those were some voice notes that came in on 083-303-7093. Remember, you can jump in the discussion on 0861-987-000. There's some tweets as well at Sebeng Kambule and at Power FM 987. Let me take one or two of those. Kaukhelo says, unfortunately, the SACP is leaderless, completely irrelevant and non-existent without the ANC. Hashtag Power Perspective there. This is Mchangana here who says, hi Sebenzile, ask Soli Mapaila, how many members does the SACP have? According to me, the Communist Party is dead and only exists on paper. One more here, Mbitakuli Gulu says, Mapaila is not listening to himself. I wonder what he's thinking about as Power Perspective listeners. He sounds like the ANC opposition party, but it continues saying that they're allies. And then one more here from Uveli, who says, SACP amagwala. If not, then they should participate in the elections. I'll get to just a few more calls there, Mr. Mapaila. I appreciate you staying just a few more minutes with us. Just some of those comments from the voice notes as well and those tweets. Your responses to those.
Yeah, thank you, Sebenzile. Firstly, this issue that was raised about transport section in Gauteng, licensing and so forth, that's a national competence. Of course, the system is national. I went through the same thing myself, delayed. I stayed in Johannesburg. I had to go to Wedela to do my license renewal. Because the national system, and we must deal with the problems there so that the systems must be effective. Like I said earlier on when I spoke about the public sector and ensuring that we employ more people in government and also increase working hours, not for the working shift, not working shift, working hours, a 24-hour economy. So in that case, for instance, the systems will be able to respond to the people meant properly, and I think there will be appropriate public services. The other issues that have been raised, for instance, one, whether, I mean, some of them, it's not even informed by reality on the ground in terms of the campaigns of the Communist Party. I say to anyone, which particular sector that we have not confronted Communist Party, whether it's corruption, we were the first organization. Others just went to political gains to talk to corruption about that or that individual. We launched a national campaign against corruption in 2010, a massive campaign as a consequence of responding to corruption that was deepening. And we lost some of our comrades, for instance, Comrade Mushala in Nelspruit, Comrade Mosman Parkway in Rustenburg, Comrade Bomba in Jagas later, and others. And we launched a massive national campaign against corruption. Way back in 2010, Red Card to Corruption, we had marches across the country. So if people are ignorant to that and they say the Communist Party doesn't exist, it's their own political views, but it's far away from reality. This is just one campaign, and there are many others that I've also spoken about, including the land campaign. Regarding, for instance, so in this case of the land campaign, this thing that we don't want people to have the economy is absolute nonsense, because the land matter for us is fundamental in the transformation of a society. But we understand our revolution and our history and where we come from. People, for instance, sometimes one or two callers here spoke about a Chris Hani in isolation of the SACP. Chris was not in the ANC himself. He was a member of the National Executive of the ANC, bound by collective decisions of the ANC itself. When they suspended the armed struggle, he was not even in the meeting that took the decision, even though he was chief of staff of the army. So, I mean, it's nonsensical sometimes how people want to justify their own hatred of a Communist Party who confronts capital than any other in this country in terms of real campaigns. It's us Let them come and say, yes, let's do on, compete on programs. Yes, they will meet us on the ground. We've got hundreds of thousands of members as a Communist Party. And these are the ones that have been all over campaigning with us for public education in our country, for public health in our country, for access to financial services, now for public banking systems in our country. And we've contributed in building tens of thousands of cooperatives in this country for self-reliance of our people. But we want them to participate in the mainstream economy, not to be isolated as cooperatives. That is why even when we fought for policies in relation to cooperatives in government, we want those policies to be implemented. But otherwise, for instance, the issue, I mean, even a guy that simply comes and say, I'm going to government, I mean, that's absolute nonsense. I know. It's me. He can't decide for me. The man was sent to government, the Communist Party, is not his personal decision. He's the leader of the party. They send him there. I may decide not to go, but the party may say you might go. But I'm not intending to go to government for his own sake. But it's wrong for people to engage in political debate from a perspective of mischief than from a perspective of sharing information and seeking to know, and even enriching the debaters.
A few more here, Ms. Mapaila, before we let you go. Mkhuluka Zanya, good evening. A quick one from you, please. Hi.
Good evening.
Yeah,
solidar in the studio. I just want to highlight three things, and I hope I won't be too long. One, to say that we've only mentioned something about the SACP struggling financially. That is politically incorrect, because one, they don't have membership, we know that, but they are surviving through Inehau. Once people they join Inehau, we know that there are funds that are going to them. And well, they are keeping buildings as offices without any members. That one is known. Number two is that you are talking about corruption and all these things, being a whistleblower during the tenure of President Zuma and via Abu Tulima Tonsela. But right now, things are happening in South Africa. A lot has been happening, but they are so quiet, so still, so scared, maze. I wonder why this quietness. So,
all right.
I don't trust them. They are no longer communists. They must not call themselves communists. They must just call themselves capitalist, South African capitalist party, then it will suit them best.
Oh my.
Good
oh
evening.
Mkhuluka Zanya, thank you for your call. Lwazi, you in Pretoria, good evening.
Oh, hi, Sebi, how are you?
Hi, good, thanks, brother.
Yeah, and hi to Mr. Solima Baile there. First of all, I would like to disagree with the other leader of the SACP who gave examples of apparently 90% to 99% of private companies failing as compared to public companies. Well, first of all, he must realize that it's hard or it's more difficult to run a private company because you're using your own money or investors and shareholders. Whereas in government, they can just simply use taxpayers' money. That means your money and the listeners' money to keep Eskom afloat, SABC afloat, post office and so forth, and that's how they usually do it, whether they are run badly or not. So that's the first thing. And when it comes to communism, look, people have to understand that when it comes to communism, you hardly, as an entrepreneur or if you're an innovator, a person who wants to invent or innovate something, you hardly have opportunities to grow in countries such as that. I mean, you can simply look at Cuba, and people can say China is a communist country, but look at the behavior. It's not a communist country, it's a capitalist country. And that is why entrepreneurs and inventors and innovators are really succeeding in those big countries. So if you want a communism, all I'm saying is that if you want to run a business in a communist country, you're hardly going to succeed. So yeah, that's all I have to say.
Lazi, thank you. Thank you very much. Tembegile in Nancyfield, hi.
Hello, Sisi. Mina ngifuna ukukhuluma nalo baba uMapaila lo.
Ukumamela, go ahead, baba.
Yeah. Ayikho into ayikhulumayo lo baba lapha. The only thing they are good at protecting their salaries under ANC. Into abayenzayo lapha, they are helping ANC to destroy the country furthermore. Nothing else. but they are so good at protecting their salaries. Thank you, Mama.
Tebogile Nancyfield, that'll be our last call on that matter. Mr. Mapaile, please go for it.
Let me start with the last one. I mean, quite clearly, one of the haters, the ANC led the liberation of this country and made the most sacrifices in the fight against apartheid and for democracy and freedom that he today enjoys, including the freedom of speech, that he can also use a public platform like this to just say anything. And therefore, we will continue to work with the ANC. We are unapologetic about working with the ANC. The ANC is not corrupt as an organization. It has good policies, and those policies need to be implemented. If its members and individuals tarnish its names, it deals with them. It has got internal processes. And I think, like I indicated earlier on when I started, as a movement, we have been facing serious challenges of recent times because of internal strife, groupings, and so forth. But it's dealing with that. It will survive those. It has survived that in the past, even when this was unleashed on them by the apartheid regime. So there's nothing that it's wrong with the ANC. In terms of the one about invention in communism, I mean, that's also ignorance. The country that led the world in innovation, including in scientific discoveries, that are still being used today, including when going to the space first, was the communist Russia. And today, the country that is leading the innovation in the world, even surpassing the leading world economy like the U.S., is China. And it's also wrong to just simply say that China is not a communist society. I mean, the communist society is measured about the ownership of the means of production. So public enterprise socialization of economy is ripe in China. They have not reached a fundamental stage or a final stage of communism. They've actually even articulated when they're going to reach that. So in the process, they are building and constructing a socialist country in which the capitalism may exist alongside public sector economy, which is what is currently happening. But the public sector economy is dominant in China. Even the socialized economy, the cooperative supported even by the public sector, is more dominant than the private sector. So it doesn't know what it's talking about. And it's a successful country. So what is successful as communism must not be appropriated by capital or by capitalism. It must be recorded as such, the success of a socialist state in China. In other places, for instance, in Cuba, you won't find people in Cuba sleeping under bridges as the people do in America. And America boasts that is the best economy in the world when its citizens sleep without food. You won't get that in Cuba. So that's absolute nonsense what he's talking about. So it's lack of information because we are also victims, by the way, of apartheid that denies us. We only were dealing with capitalist countries in Europe that has colonized us. We remain colonized, and that's part of the problem. We need to come out of that, of this cocoon of being controlled by the imperialist wealth and the European countries that have destroyed many African countries. Okay, how is it possible that many African countries after 50 years of democracy are still suffering? Because of the control of imperialism. And therefore, alternatives must be put on the table, and that's what we are doing myself even here.
Just finally, Mr. Mapaile, just wrapping up our conversation here. As alliance partners, you've said your duty is to build and defend the unity of the ANC. We know that the party currently is deeply divided. We heard this over the weekend as well, where you have one Motlante who reported to the NEC the deep divides seen in the process of putting together lists. As we know, that on its own was a challenging process as well, until there was a lifeline. How are you viewing this as alliance partners as well? Here you have a job to defend this institution, which from many of our vantage points is eating itself up slowly but surely.
Yeah, of course. I think this is worrying us. That's why we are contributing a little bit of unity ourselves into the ANC against factions that are devouring each other, treating each other as if they are enemies. But the bottom line is that our revolution has reached a stage where it needs to renew itself and reconnect with the masses and rediscover its soul and remobilize society anew and champion its main interest. And I think that with that, we think society will continue to grasp and have respect for the contributions that the ANC has made. And they can overlook what this impact has on the, this factionalism had or has had on the ANC. For instance, if you look at the current local government elections, no party has done what the ANC has done. For instance, it has asked communities to elect their candidates, even those who are not ANC members. The community go and nominate their own councillors. This is deepening democracy. This is important. This must be celebrated. So irrespective of the challenges that the ANC faces, it is still doing quite well, and particularly how it managed to handle this pandemic in the country was also an excellent intervention. So this broad-based attack on the ANC, it's really uncalled for. It's just pure electioneering. Majority of those who are saying so, by the way, have benefited from its own policies.
And that's where we'll leave it this evening, Ms. Mapaila. Always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, S70.
Thank you. The first Deputy General Secretary there of the South African Communist Party, Soli Mapaila. Now, there were a few more comments as well that came through on our WhatsApp line on 0833037093. Let's take a listen to those to wrap up our discussion this evening.
Evening, Sebe. How are you? It's Sipho, Mamelodi East. You know, the ANC Alliance, they have lots of ideas. Some of them, they get to implement them, but they never look after those things once they're implemented. I'll give an example. There was once an Mzansi account, which was forced by your COSATUs, your SACP, into the banks. Those accounts were opened by the poor of the poorest in our country. But that facility of Mzansi account, it's no more. Thank you.
When Soli started, he says there's no party that can resolve the problem of the past, that it was apartheid, which means even themselves, even he knows that even ANC, even themselves, SACP, they can't resolve it. With what they must do is to steal and steal and steal and see wherever the country is going to die, then they will be full in their pockets. That's what he's saying. They got nothing to do. They got nothing to solve. They got nothing that they can do. Every day these people, when they talk about apartheid. It does not pass. It does not go away. Apartheid every day. No, no.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.